Mr. Fribbiani, I'm afraid you've got kidney stones.
Well, what else could it be?
It's kidney stones. Or kidney stones.
What you making?
A needlepoint sampler.
No kidding.
I find it very calming. And the message helps center me.
God bless Vicodin?
Pretty good, huh?
Spelled Vicodin wrong.
That's the great thing about Vicodin. I don't care.
You know better, Speedy?
Maybe a little. Wish you hadn't seen me throw up.
Me too.
Damn it, Smithers. This isn't rocket science, it's brain surgery.
God, I hate lawyers.
Oh, me too. But they make wonderful patients. They have excellent health insurance, and they never get better.
.310 on this Wednesday afternoon, and a good afternoon to you. Pierre Bourque sitting in for Rob Snow. He's away this week, so I am tickled pink to be sitting in his seat right through until 6 this afternoon, and then right through until Friday this week. And this being Wednesday, and that great ramp into the show, Dr. Barry Dworkin, it is time to take some calls here.
Sure.
Let's talk health. Let me throw out the phone number, 613-521-8255. Star 580 on the Bell Mobility and 1-800-580-2372. We're taking your calls. Anything within the realm of Barry's expertise and in our conversations, Barry, I know it goes far beyond the medical world because you, you're a well-read person, and it's always a pleasure to have a chat with you.
Thank you.
We're going to get some calls in as the flow in, and then we'll go to the phones. Let me start off with this.
Okay.
Christmas time. I was at one of the West End malls today doing something for my school, my kids' school, mm-hmm. and the students. They're helping some families in the area. So we were tasked with going out and getting some things that will be under the trees and in stockings for mm-hmm. young children. I saw a lot of kids there, a lot of parents because of the strike and what have you. Mental stress at this time of the year, that impacts physical health as well.
Absolutely. The notion that there are two separate and completely divergent areas with regards to one's emotional health versus physical health is not true. They actually are absolutely intertwined. Think of what happens to you when you're anxious, when your heart rate picks up, your blood pressure goes up. And your body has a means of trying to compensate and deal with this. This is what we have with regards for our ability to cope with stresses. And coping involves not only applying a rational process to deal with various problems that come up, but also the physical ailments and the physical stresses that one can feel, the pains that people can feel, the palpitations in their heart, the headaches that people get. All those things are intertwined. But on top of that, especially with significant holidays, we have what's known as anniversary reactions. And anniversary reactions are remembering a family member that may have died either this year or in previous years, and that they're not around during this time. And there's the element of the emotions that you experienced at the time of their death come to the fore again because of what this time represented in the past. And so there's sometimes feelings of longing or sadness, sometimes bittersweet memories.
Maybe even bit of guilt because you're there enjoying things and your loved one is no longer.
That also plays into it, and that goes into how people cope with things, because the guilt should be something that subsides over time. And if someone continues to feel that way, then there is an issue of how to help that person overcome that, because really it's not their fault that they're here and the other person isn't, but nevertheless, they're still feeling a certain way. So you're absolutely correct that this time of year, which we hopefully associate with family and being happy and enjoying ourselves, for certain segments of our society and certain people, there is an element of sadness that also accompanies.
Sure, and add to that financial stress.
Absolutely.
You're going to buy for this, buy for that, buy for this.
And knowing one's limitations and not feeling that somehow, because of some of the things that happen to people are at times self-induced, right? Some of the decisions that we make may not be necessarily the best decisions, and we then end up in difficulties that may not have had to have happened in the first place.
Right. And, you think of people sometimes, I recall vividly a couple of days before Christmas, I was at an event at the casino on the Quebec side.
Mm-hmm.
and not to gamble, but for an event. And I noticed a couple of sad-looking people spending a fair amount of money. And I thought, well, you know, in this season, are there not better things to do if you're throwing away your money, as these people were? Then there also there's the whole instance of this season where there's always a great get-together, or there's an event up to go out with the pals or the family. You're overindulging, both in terms of liquid consumption and food, just eating the great foods and the desserts and, my gosh, all the rich foods.
And this is also the amount of calories that some people, and emphasis on some people, may imbibe, they never can get rid of. And year after year, if they participate in the same activity with the same consumption, despite what they try and do for the rest of the year, try and maintain their weight, even try and lose their weight, they don't. And so they gain that 3-4 pounds every time, every holiday time. And as the years progress, you get this cumulative effect of weight gain. And it's the same thing you see when people go on cruises and they go on these cruise ships and the food is abundant and the environment within which you find yourself promotes the consumption of food and drinking. And so the environment around us, especially at holiday time, the environment around us, the advertising, the emphasis on dinners and food and drinking makes it very difficult for any normal human being to sort of say, well, you know, I want to try and resist or at least limit myself. It can be very difficult.
We're going to go to the phones in 2 seconds, 613-521-8255. I just want to end this part of the conversation on what you and I were talking about off-air during the lunch hour here downstairs when we were at Sammy's Grill, and that is that when you have couples that come together with divergent histories and divergent traditions. I was watching a TV program last night. I think it's called Chuck's Day Off or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it was Mary Chuckmas.
Right.
And he was setting it up. His girlfriend has a Russian heritage, and he thought that he would get for her for the Christmas celebration some Russian-related foods. And I don't recall exactly what the product was, but it looked like a roll of some sort.
Mm-hmm.
And the seller, the person who made it, it wasn't like a prepackaged. This was handmade in Montreal. He said, this is 1,000 calories. And Chuck's going, wow, I can eat three of these things, you know.
Three, yeah.
And they look that good. But so
it can be very deceiving. And again, people, it's very difficult for someone to calculate the number of calories that you have in what you consume. Look at Starbucks. It's not even coffee anymore. It's coffee shakes.
Oh, that's coffee calories.
Yeah.
All right. Beverly in Canada, welcome to 580 CFRA. You have a question for Dr. Barry Dworkin.
Yes, I have a question about gastroesophageal reflux.
Yes.
I take Pantelock 40 milligrams, and even on that, I sometimes have bile coming up into my mouth, whether I'm sleeping or even walking around.
Mm-hmm.
And my question is this something I can expect to be on for life, and are there any potential problems associated with the long-term use?
Well, gastroesophageal reflux implies that acid in your stomach, produced in your stomach, is splashing upwards into the esophagus, or the tube that runs from the mouth down to the stomach. And the problem with acid that irritates the esophagus, unlike the stomach, which has a lining that will protect it from the effects of the acid, and again, to give our listeners an idea of how concentrated or how powerful the acid is in our stomach, vinegar has what we call a pH of about 5. Stomach acid is 100 times more acidic than vinegar. Has a pH of 3. And when you put that on tissue that doesn't have that protective coating like the stomach does, it burns.
Mm-hmm.
It damages the esophagus. And if you don't suppress the acid, over time, that acid damages the esophagus to the point that you can end up with scarring, where the scarring literally causes the esophagus to narrow. These are called what they call Schatzky rings. These are rings of scar tissue that run right around the esophagus on the inside that narrow it and kind of block food as you're trying to swallow. The other issue is that over time, usually on the order of 10 years or more, with untreated reflux disease, you have a risk of developing a cancerous change of the esophagus called Barrett's esophagus. Other things that can happen as well, you can get bleeding from the esophagus and have hemorrhaging too. So the idea is to continually suppress the acid if there are no other conditions that are leading to this problem. So other things that can do this are hiatus hernias. That is, part of the stomach comes up above into the area of the chest above the diaphragm, And that usually requires other kinds of treatment. But if the Pantelog is helping but not too much, a lot of times we'll recommend people take it twice a day.
Okay.
And if that doesn't work, then sometimes they'll use a scope to look into the esophagus to see if what is going on in that area.
Okay.
All right, Beverly.
Okay, thanks. Thank
you very much for your call. Let's go out to Russell. Kevin, some problems with your knee?
Yes. A couple of years ago, I had high tibia osteotomy.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. And the doctor said, well, I was 50 years old at the time, and he said that would give me a couple of years before I had to get a knee replacement.
But that's a major, just for people to understand what that is, that's where the bone is literally broken. They take a section of the bone out to reshape the leg so that the knee position of the knee changes. So if you have osteoarthritis of the knee in a certain area, it takes the pressure off that point and uses the better part of the knee. But it's an 8-week recovery from that, at least at the beginning.
Kevin, what the heck happened to your knee?
Osteoarthritis.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Boy. Now, I know, I remember, Barry, I think you messed up your knee a while back, didn't you?
Well, I had
nothing
I had,
like this, though.
This is quite a dramatic thing to do to a leg, but continue. Sorry, I've interrupted you.
Well, like I said, it's been 2 years now, and it, like the doctor said, it's not going to cure the pain. Like on a scale of 10, I was at about maybe 8 or 9 mm-hmm. then, before the surgery, and I'm at about 5 now, but I'm getting kind of fed up.
Yeah.
Now, I've had a couple other treatments. One doctor mentioned PRP. What is that? Plasma-rich, or PRP,
yes.
Plasma-rich platelets,
yes.
Is it?
Yes.
Have you heard of that?
I have. I don't know how well that will work for osteoarthritis of the knee. It's not something that I haven't seen the data to really support that use. I'd have to look that up a bit more to give a more definitive answer, but it wouldn't be the first thing on the list.
No, and it's very expensive.
Yeah.
So that's not one thing, not one avenue you'd go to.
Not unless they can show the whenever a treatment is proposed, you're already asking the questions. So, you know, what is the success rate of that particular procedure? What research has been done to what clinical trials have been done to show if this actually is effective.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if you're going to be spending a lot of money, you want to know if this is actually going to work. There are other things that can be used for the knee. There's something called viscosupplementation, which may or may not help. It's an injection of literally a lubricant into the knee. But ultimately, if the original premise of doing the surgery was to delay a knee replacement, and now you're reaching the point where it's run its course and it's not doing what it's supposed to do, the logic still applies. You're still probably looking at a knee replacement.
All right. Dr. Barry Dworkin, fascinating. I probably sounded like an idiot because I didn't realize. I thought when he was describing his symptoms, it was something that may have been work or sports related or something due to age that occurred.
It can. Osteoarthritis is a wear and tear.
It's a wear
injury.
And tear.
So, I mean, right. it can be from injuries, but also is wear and tear. Our joints do wear out over time.
All right.
And the cartilage surface erodes away.
All right, good. All right, we'll come back to the good Dr. Barry Dworkin in a few moments, and we'll get to calls from Mark and Michael and yourself as well if you want to call us at 613-521-8255. Let's go over now to check on traffic and weather with Eilish Sullivan.
So I got to get in shape. That's my next big thing now. You know, I'm not in good shape. You know, when I was younger, that's when I was in good shape. You know, I was in my peak physical condition back when I was 1. That's when I looked good. 1. Oh, man. You wouldn't know me now if you seen me back when I was 1. Young and fresh, man. Even look good for my age. People come up and go, what are you, 0? I go, no, I'm 1 over here. I go, man, you don't look a day past 0. I'm not kidding you there.
Ottawa's Norm MacDonald, always good for a funny bone. Dr. Barry Dworkin, sometimes a good laugh is
great.
A cure-all, can it?
Absolutely.
All right, let's go back to the phone. 613-521-8255, *580 on the Bell Mobility, 1-800-580-2372. If you're calling long distance and you're welcome to ask any question you'd like of Dr. Barry Dworkin. Mark, welcome to CFRA. Where are you calling from?
From Ottawa.
What part of it?
I'm calling from downtown, actually.
All right. So you have a question for the good doctor.
I do. Dr. Dworkin,
yes.
I was diagnosed. I'm not diagnosed. I have a fissure.
Okay.
I've had it for about 6 to 8 months. I was told to increase my my fiber, and I've done so. But there's still problems. Now I've on certain days, depending, supper seems to be the worst meal, mm-hmm. and I seem to be affected by sauces and
yep.
and gravies and spicy things. So I try as much as possible to stay away from those things. But sometimes it's unavoidable,
sure.
and it just seems to have taken a turn for the worse in the last couple of weeks, you know, with the pain, and sometimes it lasts for like a full day or half a day, and you know, it's usually, and it's very uncomfortable. I'm just wondering
sure.
if there's something else I could do diet-wise, or if there's, you know, special creams that mm-hmm. I could use to sort of lessen the effect. I'm using Anusol right now.
Yeah, that's not the greatest stuff.
No?
I mean, it's okay to try and reduce some of the inflammation, but there are, there's actually a compounding cream that can be used. It's a combination of what we call nifedipine and xylocaine.
And how do you spell that?
Nifedipine is N-I-F.
Okay.
Nifedipine, E-D.
Okay.
I-P-I-N-E.
I-P-I-N-E.
Nifedipine
yeah.
And then xylocaine, Z-Y-L-O-C-A-I-N-E.
Okay.
And it's a 0.3% nifedipine with 2% xylocaine.
Okay.
And actually, no, 5% xylocaine gel. And the pharmacy will compound it and mix it together.
Okay.
excuse me, into a 50 to 100 gram allotment. And that's applied as needed. And the xylocaine numbs or freezes the skin.
Okay. No, I forgot to mention, just sorry to cut you off. But
sure.
I also have two hemorrhoids down there.
Yeah, and that'll help for that as well.
Okay.
So that's one item. Another, there are other hemorrhoidal creams that can be used, but ultimately for fissures, mm-hmm. Which is literally a tear in the skin.
Yeah.
If they don't heal, then usually it's good to see a gastroenterologist or a general
right.
surgeon just to see if there's anything that they
right.
can do. But
do they ever heal? Is it possible for them to heal?
They can heal, but sometimes you have to use stool softeners and such to avoid the skin splitting too much when you go to the bathroom.
Right.
So that can make a fissure worse. So
right.
Using something like what's called PEG 3350. It's a polyethylene glycol 3350. It's a laxative that's sold over the counter. You can
okay.
get that at Walmart's or any
right.
any place. And that is gentle on the intestine and keeps the stools relatively soft. You don't
right.
get diarrhea with it.
Right.
And that's also a means of trying to reduce some of the pain or exacerbating the fissure, because it can be very, very painful.
Oh, it is. There's nothing like it.
Yeah.
Now, is it related to diarrhea? Because it seems to be worse when I have diarrhea.
No, it's just that it's open skin. So
okay.
that's why, for example, spices or hot
yeah.
sauces, they're acidic. And so
right.
those will... And they have capsaicin in it, which is what gives the spice its spicy flavor. But at the same time, it can irritate skin and hurt it, especially open skin. So that's why that it hurts like that. So what I would say is that I would speak to your physician about those creams and see if that helps you. But ultimately, if those aren't helping, then it would be seeing a gastroenterologist to see if there's something they can do to help you out.
613-521-8255 if you have a question for Dr. Barry Dworkin. Mitch in Ottawa, welcome to 580.
Hello, doctor. How
Hi.
Are you?
Fine. How are you?
Good.
Good.
My question is, I have extremely sore feet,
mm-hmm.
and it's been like that for the last 6 months or so.
Okay.
More. But I'm on my feet like 12 hours a day, and if I sit down for half an hour, it's extreme pain for the first 2 minutes of walking after I get up.
Yeah.
And at nighttime, it's been my heels is mostly what's hurting. My heels wake me up at nighttime.
Now, when you wake up in the morning and you put your foot on the ground and stand up, do you find that it hurts a lot when you do that?
Yeah.
Okay. And the pain that you have is at the bottom of the foot near the heel?
Mostly the heels, but also like the joint in your big toe.
Okay. Does it go over the arch of your foot? You know, the middle part of your foot, does the pain sort of go back and forth in that area at all?
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay. So some of the things that could be causing this, because there's a list. So, you know, to make a diagnosis, we'd have to look at the foot, but, On the top sort of things that could cause this, one of them is called plantar fasciitis. Plantar fasciitis is an inflammation of the ligaments that help keep the foot maintaining its shape. It runs from the heel to the toes. It attaches at the heel bone and runs up and attaches just at the joint, the big joints of the toes, where the toes join the foot.
Uh-huh.
And it keeps the foot, when you step, if you think of how your foot is arranged from front to back, when you step down, if you didn't have anything holding the bones together, the foot would flatten right out, right?
That's
so
right.
The arch would flatten right out. And if you're standing a lot during the day, if the shoes that you're wearing are not giving your foot adequate support, what happens is those ligaments get stretched and they tear. And when they tear, it can be very painful, exactly what you've been describing. And so typically what happens is, as you've described, when you give your feet a bit of a rest, you know, things sort of relax a bit, but the ligaments are torn. So the minute that you stand up on them again, you start to stretch. And as it stretches, it pulls and makes it much more painful.
It's one of those things you take your feet for granted a lot,
yeah.
And it's when you have a problem with them.
Right. So there's other things you want to look at too, any bone compression or arthritic changes in the foot. But ultimately, the best thing to do is obviously to have the feet looked at. There are also a lot of foot centers and centers that produce orthotics for feet, because you may need not only something to help support your feet a bit better, but also to look at the footwear that you're wearing to accommodate the type of situation that you're in when you're standing 12 hours a day, to give your foot as much of a break as possible. There are also ways to tape your foot that you can do in the morning that will help give your foot a bit more support. And the taping is a very simple procedure to do. It's easy to show someone to do it in the office. And that also can help give you a bit of relief.
But and you can also get tensors, and that might help a bit. In
a little bit, but no, the taping is actually, it's a tight form of taping.
Okay.
Specifically for plantar fasciitis, that'll give them a bit of help. But ultimately, yeah, it's the standing. The foot is just basically telling you, I can't take it anymore, and you need to help me.
I'm mad as heck, and I'm not taking it
anymore. That's pretty much
it. Let's go to Danica in Ottawa. Hello, Danica. You have a question for Dr. Dworkin.
Yes, I do. Hello, gentlemen.
Hi.
I had pineapple this week, so I was cutting up pineapples, and I had the first four or five bites were fine, and then it sort of tasted bitter, and by the sixth piece, it was like a metallic taste in my mouth,
mm-hmm.
and that stayed for about 3-4 hours, where it was, anything I ate, my tongue felt sore, like it had been burnt,
right,
and that metallic or acidic taste mm-hmm. just wouldn't go away.
So this
happened. I was wondering what that was all about.
So this was only with the pineapple. There was nothing else that you ate at the time?
No, nothing.
And then since then, you haven't had this issue?
Well, it was this week, and I wasn't sure whether it was an allergic reaction
right,
or not, so
right,
I haven't tried it again.
Okay, but since then, it disappeared and hasn't come back?
That's correct.
Okay. So, yes, one of the ways to really make sure is to try it again, but ultimately what may have happened is that the pineapple itself altered your taste buds, just in terms of the chemical compounds that are in the pineapple. It could have been from the acidity. It could have been some other compound. But usually when there's a metallic taste, you tend to see this also with acid reflux disease, where acid comes up into the mouth. It damages or temporarily damages the taste buds. That alters their ability to sense certain flavors. And so your brain loses. If you think of it as a jigsaw puzzle, and each taste represents different pieces of the puzzle. And if you don't have all those pieces, your brain interprets it differently. And so, for example, there are medications that can also give you a metallic taste in your mouth in the morning because of how it affects the nerve transmission or the signals that are sent to the brain from the taste buds that tell the brain what you're supposed to be tasting. So in this case, the pineapple could have done the same thing. Ultimately, trying it again, if you're so bold to do that, trying that again would certainly prove that this is indeed the case. But
you'd like her to try it again and call back next week?
Well, no. I don't want her to do something that's going to make her feel uncomfortable. But ultimately, it sounds like, given how short the duration was, it happened after eating only one thing. It likely is that. But in order to confirm, you'd like to retest in order to know if it's absolutely that. But it is an effect on the taste buds. And that's why the taste buds recovered. Whatever injured them was temporary. They recovered, and now the taste sensation is normal.
I find it fascinating, Barry, that in the few moments that we've been talking here, we've talked such a variety of issues here. Well, clearly dealing with the human condition, but top to bottom in some ways, and totally different. And I'm watching you, and it's okay. It's just coming out. Yeah, your brain is working and formulating, and out comes a logical and plausible explanation and some suggestions and some guidelines. So thanks a lot for that.
You're very
I know
welcome.
You're back here on Sunday. Tell
I
us
am.
A bit about that.
Well, on Sunday, we're going to have Dr. Michael Golub on. Now, this has to do with what we hear in the news sometimes. First of all, we have people that call us about atrial fibrillation. They want to know more about it, how it's treated, what causes it. And the other is sudden cardiac death in athletes.
Wow.
You know, the 14-year-olds, 15-year-olds. Yeah. We've seen that in the news, even in Ottawa where it's happened. And Dr. Golub is the director of the Inherited Arrhythmia Clinic and Arrhythmia Research Lab at the University of Ottawa Heart Institute. It's the largest clinic of its kind in North America. And they're doing a lot of genetic research on what causes these conditions. But he's going to answer your questions also about what is atrial fibrillation? How do you prevent it? Can you prevent it? What are the treatments? Who's at risk for it? And also discussing his research on sudden cardiac death and what his findings may have shown as a means of trying to find out how we can prevent this in younger people.
You've got the attention probably of about every parent listening to us right now as they're heading home or they're figuring out the balance of their day here. I'll bet you they'll be tuning in. When do they listen? When do they tune in to CFRA?
It'll be this Sunday from 4 till 5.
Sunday, 4 to 5. Barry, you've got an amazing topic. I think a lot of parents, as I said, are going to be tuned into this. Thanks for joining us on
very
Wednesday.
Welcome.
Always
my pleasure.
Enjoy this part of the week when I'm sitting in for Rob. I know he enjoys it as well. Very informative. I'm sure the folks that call in get a lot of information, but also a lot of people listening. You know, that's the thing. You don't have to necessarily call in, but you probably can relate with many of the conditions we talk about. So, Barry, thanks a lot.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
Did you cycle down and you're going to bicycle back?
No, not in winter. Don't cycle in winter.
Good. snowshoeings? All right.
Well, cycle indoors and then ski in the winter.
All right. We'll see you next week.
Alrighty.
Dr. Barry Dworkin.